Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 65. Time is simply how you live your life. No one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. And everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Cause no one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. And everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Little brother, look around. Can't you see? What's up, internet? This is the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 65, was recorded on December 16th, 2016, brought to you by the Happy Owl Network and RayRay.net. My name is Ray Morali, also known as Ray Ray. It's been a tough week, really. Been a tough year, honestly. Year 2016, everybody wants it to go away. As we know, legendary NBA sideline reporter Craig Sager passed away on Thursday. And we do a little tribute to him. EJ Christian comes on. Usually we do an old school segment, but he comes on. Well, it's more like I come on his podcast. This is more of a crossover podcast for his podcast, Earnestly Speaking. And we're combining this into a podcast called Earnestly Fundamental. I don't know, but it's both on our podcasts. And we talk about Craig Sager, and obviously we talk about the NBA. But it's more on his format where he asks the questions and I answer him. So, without any further ado, really, let's go ahead and get into that interview for me. Here's EJ Christian interviewing me about Craig Sager. I tell stories about Craig Sager, and we talk about the NBA right after. So, here we go. Scratch.
All right, Earthly Podcast. Happy Earthly Fundamental. This is a home and home, we call it, or a cross podcast, or a, Splitsville podcast. This will be also on Ray Morali, various one of the podcasts as well, too. I'm here with Ray Morali from the NorCast.com, covering the NBA. Speaking for the first time in a while on this show, on my end anyway. Ray, how you doing?
Good. It's been a tough week. I'll say that also, considering, you know, we lost a legend in the business, Craig Sager, as you know, NBA sideline reporter for Turner Sports, TNT, NBA TV, and also the NCAA tournament on CBS. We lost them on Thursday.
Thursday.
So, it's been really tough, man. It's been tough, but you know, as Craig Sager would want, he would want us to keep going, have fun, be ourselves, and stuff like that. So we will keep going and talk basketball in a little bit.
Yeah, it's been a rough year, man. It's been a really rough year. Some worse than others. I know you've had a rough year, personally, to a lot of things. And the current year thing didn't really help matters. I mean, it's not like a cherry on top of it, to be honest with you, what the year really was. You know, if you and I are both heavily involved in the NBA community, in the media, and we know it's very tight with media, it's very close to the media community, whether you're mainstream or independent, whatever, it is a very tight group, and, see how for the love that, Craig, actually when he first announced he had leukemia, and then the last couple of years and the reception, and then only through this week, as passing, just the reception he got, it again makes me proud, and I think I spoke to you about this in the past, I'm not sure it was on this show or on your show, but about how, like, with the NBA community, the NBA media, whatnot, it's always seemed to be a lot more tight-knit, more inclusive than, say, other leagues. I mean, no disrespect to NFL or Major League Baseball, but the NBA, I love talking to people who are involved in basketball because they seem to be most inclusive, most diverse than any other league.
Right. That's the thing. When I came in 8 years ago, when I started writing NBA, it's like I never felt more accepted than any other community, really, because I've been in some dramatic hobbies, dramatic genres, dramatic communities, whatever. But writing NBA, writing basketball, it's like I've never felt more accepted. Like, and I made so many friends, met so many people, Even, you know, ones that are in the business, like the mainstream media, I'm friends with them as well, and it's been an honor. And, you know, and you're right, I don't think we've ever had a more close-knit community than the NBA media community.
I mean, Craig Figgers does not really shock because, as we all learned 6 months ago or more, Lil Kimmy returned, and they had said in the spring that he had, what, 4 months to live? So mm-hmm. It's not really a shock, but at the same time, you know, when you hear the news that he passed away, just hearing it, I know where I was on Thursday, rather, where mm-hmm. I was actually editing a podcast, and literally the ticker came to my phone on the Bleacher Report, mm-hmm. and it says, Craig Figgers, you know, 20 years old, dies of leukemia.
Right.
I had a reaction. It was kind of a rapid reaction. I literally, like, oh my God, you know, kind of thing. And I reacted so angrily quickly, I almost broke my desk in my room because I literally put my fist and banged it on the freaking surface of the desk. I was so angry with the news. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, for me personally, is that when you lose somebody, I mean, obviously you lose somebody's family or friends, that, you know, personally it hurts. But even people that you may not necessarily know personally, but you grow up with, for example, like, for me, I mean, Michael Jackson was a pinnacle for me in terms of somebody who died that I admired the most, took the part and whatnot, that I didn't know personally, and with Craig Sager, you know, watching for years. I've been an avid sports watcher for 30 years, and, you know, he's always around. I mean, he was doing baseball. He was just her for 26 years. He did baseball there. He did, obviously, basketball. And, you know, Craig Sager, when you watch basketball for as long as I have and you have, he becomes a part of your life. And Craig Sager's always there. He was always constant there, and that's why it's hurt, because wasn't some ordinary broadcaster or writer that you may know who is, but who he is or she is, that they pass away, but you don't know much about them. Craig Figger is like normal to us. Craig Figger is like every Thursday, sometimes Sunday, you know, and that's why it hurts.
He's an institution in the league. Like I said, he's always been around. Like, you don't really watch, like, an NBA game once a week and you don't see him. He's always there, regardless. And especially when he had those suits, those wild colorful suits that made him even stand out more, made us love him even more, really. Because he's such a character. And I wrote this on the MoloPass.com, but I'll repeat it everywhere else, but he always seems to be having fun at his job. And he reminds us that the NBA is fun. People get so caught up on defending their favorite team, favorite player, to the point where they want to get violent and everything, right? But with Craig Sager, he just wants to have fun, talk to the players after the game or during the game, and, you know, talk basketball. And he was it's not like he was unprofessional. He was like the most professional, one of the most professional people out there. Like, he's always prepared, no matter how he looked. You know what I mean? Because I know they'll talk about his suits, but we forget how good he was. He's a maestro of style and reporting.
Yeah, he was great at his job. He was a great example of what the NBA community is. Like, loose, serious, professional, all those words define him and the NBA community. And, again, he can still be loose and aware there. The crazy outfits and still be taken seriously as a journalist. You think they're as a reporter. And he did his job very well. And look, that's not an easy job to do either. Interviewing Greg Popovich or Eric Spoelstra or, you know, Phil Jackson for years, you know, in the middle of the game and getting questions. What may be mundane questions, but making it interesting. You know?
Yeah.
He was great at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was always him. Real quick, my only interaction with Craig was Lakers Media 2012, and he came in. It was actually a regularly colored suit, which you know, I have a picture of him and Steve Nash on Instagram. It seems so regular. But he was actually carrying, like, three more suits. He was carrying it in one hand and he put us down. And then I saw him and I was like, oh, hi, I'm Ray Moraldi. Nice to meet you, Mr. Sager, right? And we talked for a little bit and he told me, because I told him it was my first media day, and he told me to just be myself and have fun. And you hear that you hear that everywhere, you hear that from everybody, but from Craig Sager, it meant so much more, because look at him, right? He's out there with his outlandish suits, and talking to everybody, and she feels so comfortable, you know? Like, it meant so, it meant that much more to me when he said it than everyone else. You know what I mean? So, while it was it seemed like a little conversation between me and Craig, it meant that much more to me, and I'm so glad I got that interaction with him for a few minutes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I actually read that. I read that, I heard it say your, you know, your tribute to Sager, on LittleCast.com. And, what you said, too, is it's pretty much being echoed across the entire, league. And not just the NBA community, but even some other, even the outside the NBA, people have had access to Craig Sager, across other sports or other media functions. I mean, mm-hmm. It was a very genuine moment on Thursday. I was taken aback again. I mean, like I said, some people just, you don't have to know them, but the impact is there. And Craig Sager's impact was there. Like, sometimes you don't know what you have when it's gone. And, you know, Craig Sager, you know, oh, salary report, big deal. No, this guy redefined the job. You know, to me, I look at that job, and I'm one of those guys who criticizes kid that why do you need a salary reporter? It's stupid. You don't need that. But to me, he gave that, and that made it his own. And to me, he is the benchmark of how bad stuff. So, you know, it's one of those where it's tough. I mean, but he's not suffering anymore, which is good. Like I said, I did a tribute podcast earlier on Friday. And you know, like I said, you know, prayers to his wife and his kids. And I mean, the pictures that were showing on Turner. You know, by the way, that was a wonderful tribute by Ernie Dunn that he did. The 6-minute video he did, whatever all of it was. The video, the pictures they showed of his family and him growing up. What you can see that. You can tell them are genuine. You can tell that this is a family guy. This was a guy who meant something to many people. And he really embraced life the fullest, up to his dying breath. Like, look, the guy went to 3 bone marrow transplants. 3.
3 times. Yeah.
So, I mean, this guy wanted to live. You know, people don't value time. He did. He defined that. And again, it was a reminder for me, myself, that, you know, take every minute, every second, seriously. Take it and use it, because you can't get it back.
Right. Yeah, and I feel so badly for his kids, because I've gotten to know Casey and Craig Jr. over the last few months, especially Casey. We talk more. And I feel so bad that they lost their father. And I don't know how that feels, but I can't imagine how much pain they're going through right now. But they are, the hashtag say you're strong. And, you know, of course, their dad would want them to live life the way he did, you know. So thoughts and prayers to their family.
Have you spoken to Kate all since the news broke?
No, I have texted her a couple times. I tweeted her once, but, I know she's on Twitter, but she's obviously, you know, mostly doing tributes to her dad, and that's perfectly fine. She can take all the time she wants, take all the space she wants. But I do know that, you know, just like her dad, Casey and, Craig Jr., they'll be Stay Your Strong as the hashtag, that was made, a couple years ago. And, you know, they will, her dad would want them to live how he lived life. You know, Sager strong.
Yeah, value every minute, value every second, you know, because if you can't get it back, you can't wait for God, because it's that quote's, you know, I put it on social media yesterday, and mm-hmm. I mentioned it in the podcast, too. That quote really, really spoke to me.
Mm-hmm.
It really touched me, because not only for him and how he, what he represented, he was an example of that quote.
Mm-hmm. But
it reminded myself how I need to approach life.
Yeah.
Like I said, time is not promised. And Craig Sager, he really valued time. He prioritized time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's his number one example. Number one, just what legacy leaves outside of broadcasting and media, of course, is how he prioritized life.
Yeah.
This is Dave McMenamin from ESPN, and you are listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
We figured out that Kevin Durant was a perfect fit to that offense. And I think what we underestimated also is that his weak side defense on the rim. Like, he's pretty good at it, isn't he? Like, he's actually been their center sometimes. And he's been one of their best interior defenders, because we know, Andrew Bogut's no longer there, and Fenton Aziz no longer there. And we thought, oh, the interior defense might have gotten weaker. But now they have Kevin Durant doing that part. And also, JaVale McGee has played better than most people thought. So, yeah, they figured it out. And I think they've also figured out their depth issues as well. Ian Clark's playing better. Patrick McCaw obviously doing some work there. And, of course, Derrick Rose is a big addition to them. So, yeah, barring injuries, they figured it out. They'll probably win 70 games again.
You think against 70?
They probably won't, but they'll fight for it. I had him at 56 to start the season, so...
But 45.
But I think they'll flirt with 70, I think, now. Yeah.
Look, I don't want to sound like a little spoiled brat,
mm-hmm.
but the season doesn't feel as compelling, because even though there's some cool stories, like Russell Westbrook's dominance, you know, James Harden's dominance, you know, couple teams are, you know, do some things, some cool things. It just feels like in the end that we're still going to end up with the difference between Golden State and Cleveland. Like, there's no way. Like, I feel like even with the Cleveland who they are, there's no way they're going to challenge those. I think there's a wide gap between those teams and then San Antonio and the Clippers. I just don't see any team. Like, last year, we would say, okay, well, three-team race. No. For me, the two-team race can see the Cavaliers and the Warriors. And that's why the season is a little less compelling than that in years past.
Mm-hmm. Is that a bad thing, though? Because back in the 80s, we would have Lakers and the Celtics dominate. In the 90s, we had the Bulls dominate. And, of course, early 2000s, we had the Lakers
dominate.
Right,
but we always had some rotating door. Like, even though L.A. dominated the 80s, there was still one year you get a Houston. There was one year you would get, you know, somebody else. There was always mm-hmm. some sort of rotating doors. if not in the West, at least in the East. It wasn't Boston, it was Philly. It was somebody else. It feels like this year, I think because we're so used to the idea of Bond being in the finals, and this will be a seventh game in a row if he makes it this time, which, I mean, I don't see why he wouldn't. The angle of the course has been better than they were last year, at least in terms of superstars, you know? I just feel like at this point, and look, I'm still watching the game, so basketball, I love any basketball. My whole thing that's going on, but it does, for the first time in a long time, a little less compelling.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we also thought that the Warriors were a shoo-in to win the NBA championship, but of course, they lost the last 3 years in the NBA finals, so they lost to Cleveland. I don't know, because I feel like when there are dominant teams, we want parity. When parity is going on, we want dominant teams. So I'm just enjoying it. You know what I mean? Like, because
yeah.
I hear, like, the other side of the coin all the time. It's like, oh, man, I wish we had more parity. I wish we had, like, 4 or 5, you know, 50-win teams. And then when that's happening, they want, like, the Lakers and Celtics of old or the Bulls. And I don't know what people want. So, you know, I'm just enjoying it.
You wrote about this on your site, I believe yesterday or the day before, and I this is something I totally agree with you on this.
Mm-hmm.
You're convinced right now that Toronto is the second best team in the East, right?
They are, yeah.
Is there any chance that they learned anything from last year in the conference finals with Cleveland and their advantage? Maybe they're a little more competitive in the playoffs?
I don't know, because right now they're not even a great defensive team. Granted, Cleveland isn't also. So I think what they're going to try to do is try to outscore them, which Cleveland did in spades last season with all those three-pointers. So, and Toronto's going with the old-school kind of offense where they're shooting a lot of mid-range and going inside a lot more with DeMar DeRozan and stuff like that. But they still shoot threes at a pretty good rate. But I don't know if I will probably give them a chance to beat Cleveland, even though they've come up really close in the regular season. Who knows how the playoffs will be? I just think that Cleveland has that gear to step up defensively, while Toronto, I haven't seen that just yet. You know, they were that kind of defensive team like 2 years ago, but right now they're just outscoring everybody, and that's not the way to beat them. That's not the way to beat Cleveland in the playoffs.
Are there any, and you can pick one of each conference you want to, are there any teams in each in any of these conferences, East or West, that we're not, maybe that we're not picking right now, Preston, that you can see making things a little bit, you can pick one each.
In the East, you mean?
Or both.
Man, early on, I would say Atlanta, but they lost by 9 of 10.
They lost 9 of 10,
so yeah. I have no idea what's going on there, because Dwight Howard's playing well. Dennis Schroeder's playing pretty well, and both Paul Millsap, but all their other guys, their wings are basically like bringing them down. Like, they're not making their threes. They're not putting up the offensive numbers that they need to put up. As for the West, I still think the Clippers can get it done. They're the best matchup for the Warriors. Unfortunately, they just always seem to blow it in the big stage. But they have the matchups right there. Their bench is deeper. Their defense is much better. But unfortunately, if the Warriors get off to like a 25-5 start against them, they're not going to beat them. They can't play catch against the Warriors.
You know, the Atlanta thing is weird because I thought that would work out, and the start they had was like, great, well, this could work out. Maybe they could, not necessarily challenge Cleveland, but they can make things a little interesting in the East. But I don't know what's happened to them since that 9-2 start.
It's funny because they did beat Cleveland earlier at Cleveland, and they just beat Toronto last night. So, at Toronto. So, I don't know what to make of the Hawks right now. Like, they should be, like, in an upper tier. But, clearly, that's not happening after that swoon they just went through. So, again, it's Cleveland, then Toronto, then the rest of the East. It's all scrambled in the East right now. You know?
Yeah.
I see Milwaukee getting in and out, too.
Yeah.
What happened to your Lakers? Like, a month ago, I'm sitting here trying to make a case for them to make the playoffs, and all of a sudden, the wheels just kind of fell off after that solid start.
It's the injuries, man. It's the injuries, and then another adjustment player trying to fit those guys in. Like, they've had disappointing losses against the Suns and the Nets. They should beat those teams, right? But they got into those bad habits. Like, they're awful defensively. Like, they had those bad habits. And then, finally, the ball movement's gone. Everyone's pointing to Jordan Clarkson's regression during the season because he got off to such a great start. And then suddenly, it just seems like he's trying to shoot his way back in to the detriment of the team. So, they stopped that ball movement. They kind of give up on... They've been known to give up defensively, and now it's even worse. It's even more prominent now. And, again, they're a young team. They get a big lead and they lose it, or, you know, once they're down like 10, it's hard for them. They get down by 30 or whatever. They're like, their fighting spirit's gone. So, their win against Philly is a good start to get back on track. But at this point, like, I'm not sure if they're going to win, you know, 35 games at this point. You know what I mean? Because, it's a young team. It's an inexperienced team. But, you know, next year, barring injuries, they should be someone to watch out for because, you know, you've gone through a season together and, you know, they're going to be much more experienced about this sort of thing. And, you know, Luke Walton's a good coach. Like, he definitely earned his job. And everyone's listening to him. It's a stark contrast because, like, last year, Byron Scott called him out. The team didn't listen. Luke Walton called him out. They're listening to him. But it's all about the power of positivity. As, you know, the WWE Tag Team Champions of New Day would say.
Who's your MVP so far this year?
Oh, wow. Based on the record right now, I'm going to go with James Harden.
Wow.
Yeah, they've won 9 straight. I believe they're tied for 3rd in the West. He's got 6 triple-doubles, and he's making everybody better. And Mike D'Antoni just did the perfect coaching move. Like, Harden has the ball and all the time anyway. Why not put him at point guard? And it's worked out beautifully. And everyone is doing so good for the Rockets right now. Clint Capella has had a great season. Patrick Beverley, Trevor Ariza defending their asses off. You know, Sam Decker's a player now. You know, they've got everything going so far. And I don't know if they'll bowl off for them in the playoffs because it's still Mike D'Antoni and their defense is obviously not as great. But, you know, it's kind of made us believe in them for a little bit.
So. It's really a cool story, too, because, like, it's sort of a redemption for Mike D'Antoni. Am I wrong for thinking that he might be the coach of the year right now? If he's ended right now.
No, not at all.
I mean, I feel like that's the story of the year right now in terms of coaches. Him.
Yeah, not at all. Like, that's a very... A good point right there. D'Antoni, probably. They'll probably think of D'Antoni. And also David Fizdale for Memphis, who they played very well without Mike Conley. And I believe they're like 6th in the West right now. No one has said they're going to be 5th in the West. So those two teams are really like heating it up right now.
I saw a thing on a couple days ago about Dirk Nowitzki that he could be retiring. Much injuries there now. And he may consider retiring very soon.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh! And another one. We lost KD, we lost Kobe, we lost Duncan, and now Dirk. Now, come on.
Yeah. I mean, this is what his 19th year, right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's about time. I mean, yeah, he's been hurt a lot too. Like, I could see him playing one more year if he was actually playing the entire season, but he's not. So, I wouldn't be surprised if he's out after this year. And he said that, so, you know.
And that's the thing I'm really worried about, too, because Dallas, you know, even on the off year, they've been able to, you know, Mark Cuban's able to, you know, do some back work here and there. Once you lose Dirk Nowitzki, once their franchise is gone, I mean, with Dallas, where do you go? I mean, like, I can see the scenario right now where the Mavericks return to what they were in the early 90s for a little while until they
got 5
in a row. I can see that coming.
Yeah, those were rough years, man. 11 and then 13 wins afterwards. Like, oh, that's awful.
Pre-Dirk Dallas was not fun. Pre-Dirk Dallas was not a fun team to watch.
Yeah, well, the best player is like Terry Davis. People have probably haven't even heard of Terry Davis, but
yeah, Terry Davis.
And Davis' dad, by the way.
Correct.
Yeah. They'll have to go through the draft. I'm not much of a draft guy, but I'm sure they'll have to go through that. Because Harrison Barnes is not a number one guy. Like, he's doing a good job carrying the offensive load, but ultimately, his role will be probably at best a third scorer. You know? He's not a game changer. And that's okay. That's okay. But they're paying him to be the number one option right now, but there's just no, I just don't see him as the type of guy that can, you know, change the game, lead a team to the playoffs. Obviously, look at Dallas right now. So, you know, that's fine, but they'll need to get someone from the draft who's a game changer.
Last question. We got the NBA. Thank God it was doing no stoppage. I remember the nightmare of 2011. I mean, it was bad enough that Heat lost the finals that year. They had a lockout after. But we won't have a lockout. We have we're going to have a NBA basketball fluid for next, was it 6 years now? This was six, 7 years?
7 years, yeah.
I guess the NBA is in a good place, man. It seems like it's in a good place now. The fact they got this labor deal taken care of pretty, you know, not quickly, but they got it way before, you know, the players owners offered out the deal. I mean, it speaks volumes where the NBA is right now as a league, and the league right now is in a very good place.
Yeah, because people like to say that the golden age of the NBA is like the early 90s, right? And, yeah, we had Michael Jordan winning championships the entire decade, basically. But, yeah, like, people are watching the NBA. There's a lot of stars. You know, it's a fun game to watch now, you know, as much as people like to romanticize the 90s. That wasn't really that fun. You know what I mean?
No.
Yeah, but, you know, it's free-wheeling basketball. Very fast, lots of three-pointers, hardly 80 ground and pound teams these days, only probably like Memphis and Utah or those kinds of teams.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, relatable stars as well. Like, you got Curry, you got LeBron, you got Carl Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, James Harden. There's so many stars right now in the league. And, you know, of course you rather see your stars visible than being covered by a helmet, right?
So, right.
So people can relate to that. And,
exactly.
You know, and they're making a lot of money as well with that huge TV deal that they signed recently. So, yeah, they're probably in the best place they've ever been. So, yeah, I think Adam Silver should run our country.
Oh, man. Anyway, Ray Moraldi, thanks for the podcast, man. Really appreciate it. This is a cross-episode podcast. Earnestly fundamental.
Don't you like that? It's kind of cool. Earnestly fundamental. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, yeah. Follow me on Twitter at TheNolasPass. Check out my site, TheNolasPass.com, as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ray. Appreciate it.